Hello, everybody. I'm Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with Episode 71 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling A Conversation with Syngenta's Northwest Wheat Breeder, Jen Vonderwell. Vonderwell greeted me and Capital Press reporter Matthew Weaver on April 20th at the company's location outside of Cheney, Washington. Weaver was along to take photos of me conducting the interview for a story he's doing in the agricultural newspaper about the proliferation of podcasts. For faithful listeners of Wheat All About It, I cannot tell a lie. There are a lot of other podcasts out there to while away the hours in your truck, tractor, or combine. And if you want to rest your eyes at night rather than watch television, you've got a lot of interesting options. Explore the podcast universe. But back to this podcast. Vonderwell replaced John Moffat as breeder at the Cheney facility. You can listen to an interview I did with Moffat in episode 11, just after he retired from a career breeding an array of varieties. If you haven't heard it before, I'd highly recommend listening to it. The best way to access the podcast archive is through the Washington Grain Commission website at wagrains.org. That's WAGRAINS.org. Go to Wheat All About It summaries at the bottom of the page and navigate back to episode 11 entitled John Moffat, Kingmaker. He's an interesting guy whose life took unexpected turns. Wow, I am digressing. Let's start over. As I was saying, Vonderwell greeted Matthew Weaver and I at the Syngenta facility. A Midwesterner by birth and sensibility, she wasn't raised on a farm, but her mother was, and her great-grandfather had, in fact, been Secretary of the Indiana Department of Agriculture in the 1970s. There were many visits to see him and soak up an agricultural ethos. When I asked Vonderwell to describe what made a Midwesterner, she said they were adaptable, honest and true, very good down-to-earth people. I think she not only ended up describing herself, but her description also sounds suspiciously like farmers in general. And maybe that's why Vonderwell ended up being part of the profession. She was hired by Syngenta 14 years ago, just after AgroPro, the original company, was sold to the Swiss-based crop protection chemical and seed giant. Last year, Syngenta was swallowed by ChemChina for $42 billion, a change Vonderwell only sees as a positive development, given that the new ownership has stabilized investment in the company's research and development activities while providing a long-term commitment. Vonderwell has a lot of interesting things to say ahead about wheat breeding. The most noteworthy, in my mind, is the notion that new varieties can be released on a 5-year schedule from first cross. She also speaks about quality, the company's hybrid wheat program, and late maturity alpha amylase, a falling numbers phenomenon that hit her company particularly hard in 2016. But before I got to any of the easy questions, I ask her the toughest one I could think of. What's your title here?
Geez, that's a tough question. I think right now they're calling me Seed Development Lead for the Pacific Northwest.
Otherwise known as a wheat breeder.
Yeah, pretty much. That's how I live.
Okay, so tell me about your background. Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? And why wheat breeding?
I grew up in a little town in central Indiana known as Fortville. It's a one-stop light town. It's pretty small. My grandmother still lives there to this day in the house that my grandfather built, great-grandfather built, back in the mid-50s. I went to school I graduated high school there, and then I went to Purdue for my bachelor's and Auburn for my master's. As far as why is wheat breeding, I mean, I don't really have any recollection of going to a wheat field or walking through a wheat field until I was at least in my mid-20s. And really, I came when I got back to Indiana for work. I saw farmers who grew wheat were the farmers in Indiana that were the most progressive and the most forward-thinking farmers that we had, and I wanted to work with those guys.
Why do you think that was?
Largely because they were most folks that grow wheat typically have a 3 or 4 crop rotation, and have long-term sustainability of their farms in mind. So typically those were the ones that brought in a secondary cereal crop.
And at what age did you figure out that you wanted to be involved in agriculture?
Well, I guess it was kind of early on. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, I didn't live on a farm or anything like that, like most folks, I guess, that wind up in agriculture. But my mother did, and she really saw that as a shortcoming of mine, I guess, growing up, and that I needed to get some more exposure. So she took me most weekends and for extended trips to hang out with my great-grandfather, who was retired by the time I came around, but at his peak, I guess, of his career, he was the state secretary of agriculture in Indiana in the 70s, and knew a whole lot about farming and how to do it very well. So I learned a lot from him and a love for growing things, and that's kind of where it started.
And Purdue in Indiana, where you got your undergraduate degree, and Auburn in Alabama, where you got your master's degree, are both well-respected agricultural schools. What are two things you learned that have stayed with you from those two schools?
Well, really at Purdue is where I first learned how to study and how to be a student of any kind of science. And I really came away from there being a student in forestry as someone who could go out into the woods with a topo map and compass and feel just perfectly comfortable. Auburn, on the other hand, that's really where I learned to be a research scientist. I came away from there with the ability to seek out the unexplained and unexpected in projects and explore those.
Do Midwesterners perceive the Northwest as an agricultural backwater or an agricultural bellwether?
Well, I don't know. I guess it depends on the Midwesterners you ask. Most people that live in the Midwest live in larger cities. When they think of the Northwest, you know, they think of Seattle and a lot of rain and trees and spotted owls and things like that. But most farmers in Indiana, most progressive farmers in particular, understand that there's a great growing area out here and some very good science going on.
You have two sons. Has raising boys taught you anything about raising wheat?
Well, no, not really from a raising wheat standpoint. I'm certainly much more ruthless with wheat. In this business of breeding wheat, you got to cut it or you get kicked out. And I'm one of the best at throwing stuff away, and I certainly can do that in my own family. With kids, I think they've given me an ability to work within teams a little bit better. I'm more patient and more understanding and have a lot more empathy now that I've had kids, for sure.
What was your first job? Not your first job in agriculture, but your first job.
My very first job actually was in agriculture. When you're 14 in Indiana, at least at the time that I grew up, you could work detasseling corn, and I did that one summer.
And what did you learn there?
Basically, how not to cut your hand off. That's kind of the rule. Just a general understanding of safety. That was the big takeaway for me. When you're growing up at the time that I did, you didn't think about things like long sleeve shirts and hats in a hot summer day. I mean, it was more about burying more skin. But I got serious about taking care of myself in that location.
So most of your experience before coming here to the upper left-hand corner of the nation was in the soft red wheat country of the southern Midwest. What are the difficulties in transitioning to soft white?
Oh, well, I don't really think there are a whole lot of difficulties. In my breeding program previously, it was, I'd say, roughly 80% soft red winter. But then we also had a small market share in soft white winter as well. And that was a focus for us, too. So a decent part of our program was in soft white.
And where did that soft white go?
Most of it was in grown in the thumb of Michigan or in central Michigan, and then up through the northern Lake States, the Finger Lakes area, and upstate New York.
So would it go into cereal production?
Yeah, for the most part, and would be largely used domestically.
Mm-hmm. Now, you replaced John Moffitt, who basically built this facility, had been here for 20 years. Was it intimidating to come in and replace him?
No, not at all. I thought of it more as inspiring. You know, ever since my time in AgriPro, I've known John, not necessarily worked with him on a day-to-day basis, but certainly sought to pick his brain every chance I could. And I learned a lot about this region, and just on the side of the fact, just talking with him about breeding.
Syngenta has been very successful with breeding or introducing facultative DNS. Are you involved in that?
Yeah, certainly. We do test for that fall planted spring market.
Is that something that you plan to increase? Is that, I mean, it seems like a lot of farmers are very serious about it. And, of course, the DNS price encourages them to be so.
Yeah, sure. And that's what really drives things like that and drives our decisions from a breeding standpoint is a market need, and a premium is the pull-through that we need for something like that.
What kind of germplasm are you crossing with, and how much collaboration is there among the Syngenta wheat programs?
Considerable amount of collaboration. So, yeah, I get I would consider it fairly diverse cross section of germplasm. It comes from all parts of the globe. We're looking for a number of different traits to help improve what we have here in this market share. And we collaborate with our other breeding programs, particularly those here in North America, very regularly.
Do you make all the crossing decisions yourself?
Well, yeah. Well, at least for this year I did. But most of the time it's a concerted effort between the scientists here at this site.
So all of the scientists get together and they say, what about this? What about this?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. John Moffat ushered in the use of double haploid breeding in the Pacific Northwest to speed up the selection and release of new varieties. Are you using this breeding technology or any others in addition to conventional greenhouse crosses in your own program?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're always seeking to increase the efficiency and the speed of our breeding process. Double haploids are a fixture at every region that we have breeding programs here in North America. And they were also very important in my other program in the East. At the same time that, Ovation came out, which was our first DH material, we had the same thing in the East, and that was our SY007. And they came out at about the same time. But now we have new technologies that we can couple with that double haploid technology to help speed it up even more. In 2016, I released a variety SY100 that only took 5 years to get it to the market, which...
5 years.
Shaved off a fair number of years.
Explain to me how you got a wheat variety out in 5 years.
It was a big part of pulling a lot of things together, not just our own technologies within the breeding program, stepping things through their stage gates to get the right amount of data to get it released, but also a big commitment on the production side to get that done.
This is 5 years from the first cross?
Yes.
That's amazing. What's most important, yield or quality or something else?
Well, I think what's most important is the return on investment from a grower when he gets a bag of seed, what he gets in return for that purchase. So it can be an equal share. I mean, it's a constant balancing act between quality and yield, but essentially in just about every region we have, it's the yield that primarily drives that.
Was it a surprise to you to see the emphasis we put on quality in the Northwest?
No, not at all. I mean, in just about every program we have, quality is very important to us, and it's important in Syngenta, and we take it very seriously. That said, we've seen a number of different players across different geographies that have gone different ways, and it shifts things within every different program about around quality. But it still is a very important thing to us, and we seek to put it into our varieties and make sure we have something that we can meet our market needs.
Syngenta has three least desirable varieties in the 2018 preferred variety brochure. Does that bother you?
Yeah, well, it certainly does bother me. But the trouble there is that least desirable to one is often most desirable to another. And so it's constant balancing act that we do within the markets, especially for white wheats. But that said, trade-offs within a farmer's perspective are always real. whether it's be quality or for yield or quality-based characteristic or a better agronomic characteristic. Something, again, that gives something of a great benefit to a grower, might be sought after and really helps them, again, from a return on investment perspective, then we see it as our responsibility to make sure it gets out there.
So what does that mean in terms of releasing least desirable varieties?
Well, essentially, I would definitely would not like to release a least desirable variety. And when we have specific cases, too, I mean, the quality parameters are fairly wide and robust and reasonably static. But, you know, we can have small differences. Like we had a case where Touchstone fell down to least desirable this year in its first reporting, and it really doesn't get a big credit for its protein content, which is a really nice thing to have, but it gets a pretty good knock for mix time, which brings it down to that least desirable just by the slimmest of margins. So when you have things like that sort of get overlooked, and something falls down, then that. That's a question mark.
I want to go back to releasing that variety in 5 years that you were talking about. Is that an outlier? Is that something that you can do again and again? Or is the more reasonable time to release a variety still in the 7 to 10 year time period?
No, I think as we go forward and we couple more technologies, and it's certainly 5 years is a very doable thing.
Does this mean you've been here for a year that we're going to see a Jen van der Waal variety in 4 years?
Well, certainly you'll see my influence in things that come out, next year. But it's tough to say. I mean, it certainly will be much quicker than normally might be expected. I don't really know. I haven't really nailed down my PNW phenotype yet. You know, every breeder has their own phenotype. In the East, it was a high biomass, big head size phenotype, and more than likely something like that will be similar out here for me.
Mm-hmm. Germplasm sharing is getting to be a real issue between private companies like yours and universities. What's your philosophy on sharing germplasm?
Well, for us, I mean, within Syngenta, we have a wide variety of agreements with various both universities and other third parties that we leverage across all of our programs. So we are very, and traditionally have been, very open to sharing of germplasm, and really see the universities as pillars in the states that they're in, and of great source for not only material but breeders going forward, and best management practices and leadership and stewardship for wheat in their states.
How are you approaching the falling numbers conundrum as it relates to late maturity alpha amylase?
I suppose with cautious optimism. We, as a company, really feel like there was a great deal of knee-jerk reaction when we had that problem a couple of years ago. And we really don't understand a whole lot about what happened and what caused it. And we really took it on the chin with our varieties at that time. So until we can really wrap our heads around what is really going on and what the science is behind this sort of issue, we'll still stay on the cautiously optimistic side.
Is there a weakness in current Syngenta varieties that you would like to improve upon?
Well, nothing really directly. I have certain targets that I want to achieve. Of course, yield is a high one. Test weight is always a very big thing, and quality are always very big things. Those were our three big three targets that we shoot for within our germplasm. But then, we always we seek to improve it in other ways as well.
Back in the 1980s and 1990s, Monsanto had a company called Hybritech that was in the hybrid wheat game. The yields were enormous, but making the hybrids wasn't cost-effective, and the company closed. Has Syngenta overcome the cost hurdle?
Yeah. Although I'm not directly involved with the production side of our business, I can certainly tell you that That was one of the key first hurdles we had in selling this hybrid wheat scenario to our business managers. And we still wouldn't be in that business had we not gained that confidence at that time that we could come across that hurdle. It's really helped having both HybridTech's material and the former employees from HybridTech in our own programs to help us learn more and accelerate our efforts in the hybrid realm.
When will we see commercially available hybrid varieties in the Pacific Northwest? And I use the word commercially available because, as I understand it, you already have some hybrids planted in the state.
Yeah, that's correct. Hybrids are indeed commonplace in our program, and I'm just now giving the business some potential candidates to look at. Certainly they look promising. We're all very excited. But those decisions are made by a team of individuals, and we really have to sell that to the business. And we're going to make the most responsible and steward-based decision that we can in bringing hybrid wheat to the market.
In 2016, Syngenta was saying that they would have hybrids by 2020. Is that still the timetable?
Yeah, and that's still the timetable for the Northern Plains in particular, areas where we have spring wheat, where they can really turn generations a little faster than we can in winter wheat.
What about gene editing? Are there any plans to take advantage of that technology?
Sure. Like everyone else, we're taking a look at that and how to really integrate it within our programs. And, of course, here in the PNW, the big caveat is we need to have the buy-in from the Asian markets to be able to consider anything to go forward.
How much emphasis in the future will you put on clear-field herbicide-tolerant varieties? And the reason I ask is that the clear-field system has been around for 17 years. Nothing lasts forever. Are you going to continue to make that a major priority in your program?
Well, I don't know about major priority. What we are hearing from our farmers is that it's something that's nice to have, but many other agronomic factors will trump the need.
And what about the new coaxium axygen herbicide trait? Do you plan to introgress that trait into varieties?
Yes, and we have started that. We have a license to do introgressions, and we will see where it goes from there. Colorado State did a fantastic job, from what we can tell, bringing this new technology to fruition. And we're looking at where best we can fit that within our own portfolio.
Now, there was a time that breeders walked the fields looking at their crosses to determine whether particular cultivars were worth advancing. Is walking fields necessary anymore, or is today's breeding a numbers game that is simply done in the lab?
Never. We will never stop walking in the field. And a wheat breeder really belongs there. We really have to get out there and let the wheat talk to us. Yeah, I can have all the blups and all the notes in my book to try to make decisions and all the data in front of me to try to make decisions. But in the end, it's my eyes and ears and out there in the wheat field that tells me what I need to know.
So who or what is your chief competitor?
My number one competitor, without a doubt, is time. Just getting material out there in a timely fashion to get the best bang for the buck and the best return for our farmers.
Certainly, today's farmers have a lot more choices about what provides the best bang for the buck than they did 20 years ago. And did you hear what Vonderwell said about hybrid wheat? Hybrids are indeed commonplace in our program. Folks, if Syngenta scientists have figured out how to make hybrids work financially, that could be a game changer because of the yield bump they'll provide. I only hope the quality is there as well. That's all the time we have. I hope you've enjoyed episode 71, or what I've entitled, A Conversation with Syngenta's Northwest Wheat Breeder, Jen Vonderwell. Please join me again next time for another episode of Wheat All About It!
Grass is fine if you've got a cut or 4 feet and stand in the mud, but we've got two and teeth to chew. Don't give us none of that vegetarian stew. We're carnivores and we ain't ashamed. The reason's simple, it's in the refrain. We feed you.